Welcome, everybody, to the Greatness Delayed podcast for BiteSizeImpressions.com. I am your host, Michael Zupan, and before I get started today, I would like to remind everyone to go and check that website out. While you're there, make sure you do all the normal subscribey type things, such as clicking on the RSS, Twitter, and Facebook subscribe buttons. Also, if you're into this podcast, up in the podcast tab, you will find all previous editions of the show in audio, streaming, and downloadable formats. And if it was recorded via Google Hangouts, there's going to be a YouTube link there as well. If that's not convenient enough for whatever reason, we are now available through iTunes Podcasts. So if you have an iPhone, iPod, iPad, or iWhatever, you can take us with you on the go right from there. Anyway, enough of that advertising stuff. Let's get started with the show. Alright, so to start things off today, we're going to be talking about a game that I had really, really, really hoped to never discuss on this podcast ever again, but honestly, Bungie and Activision have made it really, really difficult for me to ignore this particular product out in the gaming world. And it's not just me, honestly. Within the last 12 or 13 months or so, no game has garnered as much attention in the media as Destiny has. So that's what we're talking about today, Destiny. And I have a reason for that, obviously. I'm not bringing it up just because. A little bit of history, though. A little bit of background first, if you haven't been following me on Twitter or listening to previous podcasts. I used to have a really, really good consumer relationship with Bungie. Back in the day, of course, it was Halo, Halo 2, Halo 3. I enjoyed all of those games. You know, not only were the campaigns and the multiplayer absolutely fantastic, and honestly, I probably spent more time playing Halo 3 on my Xbox 360 than anything else last generation. It wasn't just that. It was also the fact that if you were going online and you were paying attention and you were listening to the community managers and whatnot from inside the company, it really seemed like through what they were doing with these games and how they were interacting online that they really cared about their customers. It was that sort of a company. I felt good doing business with them. So, of course, when they got out of Halo and we heard about Destiny, I was really excited because Bungie knew how to make really great games and experiences that were replayable for years to come. So when Destiny came out, I bought it on day one, of course, and I had a lot of fun with it at first. You know, I hooked up with some friends via Fire Teams, and we did the missions, and I played through the campaign, and I did the PvP sort of stuff, and after about a month or so, I ended up selling the game. I sold the game because it revealed itself to me over the course of the few weeks that I had been playing it to be a very hollow, empty experience. It was really fun at first, but everything started to get really stale really quick, and I just lost interest. I mean, there was nothing in the way of plot. I played through the campaign, and I didn't know anything more about the game when I finished it than when I began. I also didn't know anything about my character, what my purpose was, what exactly we were fighting for specifically. None of it really seemed to make any sort of sense to me. It was just go and shoot things and beat the bad guy. And I know there's really nothing explicitly wrong with that, but I needed a little bit more out of this game because they just expected you really to do the same thing over and over and over again, and I wasn't all about that. It just wasn't fun because they tied this element of RPG with the loot drop system into it, and while that was a really good idea, it was not implemented very well at all. The rate of loot being dropped just didn't seem very rewarding. And I'm typically the kind of person that does not mind a game with a good grind to it, but Destiny just really seemed to be holding back. And obviously Bungie felt the same way because they spent the better part of the next year retweaking that entire system, but we'll get to that in a minute. I was very disappointed in the game. I felt kind of ripped off. And of course, for a game like this, it was a major, major investment by Activision towards Bungie's part in order to get this game published. And we're talking allegedly about $500 million being spent between the game's development and the huge marketing campaign. I mean, there was a lot at stake for this game. So of course, they had a season pass. And the season pass offered these quote-unquote expensive expansions, which weren't really expansions. So that was another thing that sort of rubbed me the wrong way. It was just these expansions were just a new way for them to say, okay, here is the new weekly raid kind of stuff that you're going to be able to do as long as you have the new DLC. But if you don't have the new DLC, you're pretty much going to be left out in the cold, because that's what everything is geared for. So it wasn't just an initial $60 investment, and if you didn't want the new map packs, you didn't have to buy the new map packs. You know what I mean? It was pretty much a money vortex. It was a money sink. You know, they just wanted you to keep buying the game, and if you didn't buy that new piece of DLC, your game was really almost sort of worthless at that point. So I didn't really care for that as well. So after that DLC came and went, of course, here we are. We're approaching fall 2015, about 1 year after Destiny had originally launched, and here we are with another expansion called The Taken King. And The Taken King is really sort of interesting because it attracted all walks of life. Now, maybe you were someone like me who was turned off by the game near the beginning of its lifespan because it was a blatant DLC platform and you weren't really all about that. The Taken King seemed to make enough changes where you would sort of, you know, kind of tilt your head to the side and say, maybe now is the time for me to get back into this game. And if you were somebody who stuck with Destiny throughout this whole time, I think a lot of Destiny players out there, whenever I talk to them, they seem to just sort of complain that it is sort of a chore to do everything that you have to do in order to compete in the weekly raids and everything. And that chore doesn't always really seem to feel like it's worth it. So they were really excited about the changes coming in The Taken King as well. And those changes were they had redone the leveling system, the light system. They had redone the loot. They sort of changed the economy a bit around as well. But they also had introduced something that really had me scratching my head. And it was microtransactions. And when I heard about this, what I said online was, why? Why does this game need microtransactions? And the response that I got was, well, it's because these microtransactions, if we participate and we buy these microtransactions, it's going to help fund future DLC that will be given to us for free. And of course, right then I had to say, whoa, 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 you're not really buying this, are you? So let's back up and dissect this a little bit, because this sent off some major red flags for me. To start, Activision and Bungie collectively have been trying to let us know just how magnificent this game is ever since it released, okay? They've done something with this game that I like to call providing bull statistics. It's basically when they're giving you these really ginormous numbers that really don't really mean anything, but people see these numbers and they go, ooh, that's really impressive, even though they're really sort of being fooled. And I talked about this a little bit earlier in the year when Evolve came out, and they did the same sort of thing. They provided this spreadsheet online that had all these really high, impressive looking numbers, and I broke down what it meant. It wasn't impressive at all. It's like me saying I took 2,000 steps today. Wow, 2,000, big number, really impressive, right? No, it's only a mile. You know, it's that sort of a connection here. So these statistics included, by September 17th, 2014, there were over 11 million gameplay sessions in North America. Even before that, on September 10th in 2014, they claimed that Destiny was the number one new gaming franchise launch because they shipped, not sell through to customers, shipped $500 million worth of product to retail stores. Okay? From there, now again, they spent about $500 million on this franchise between development and marketing, and that was at the time of the Plain Jane vanilla launch. Apparently, the game sold about $325 million worldwide in its first 5 days. They bragged that people had played for about 100 million hours in the first week. And by the way, all these things collectively come from Kotaku, by the way, since they all had this hilarious stuff put together very conveniently for me in a single article back in May of 2015. As of September 17th, 2014, They were bragging that people had participated in 137 million activities. By October 10th, the average player had played Destiny 20.9 times. Because, you know, every once in a while, I like to play a game for 0.9 times. Destiny averaged about 3.2 million players each and every day. By October 16th, people racked up about 125 million hours of gameplay, which means really that only 25 million additional hours were logged after the first week, where there were 100 million hours logged, which seems like quite the drop-off. They've also gone on to break down how many hours the game had been broadcasted, how the game boosted PS Plus subscription numbers in the week prior to launch, and on and on and on this goes. And they're not coming out, for some reason, ironically, with all these impressive numbers, they're not coming out to say how many copies of the game had sold, how much money they've made, how much of that money is profit, you know, all the numbers that really count. So this thing about microtransactions, it sets off a major red flag for me, because according to Activision, according to Bungie, this game is the best thing that's ever been released in anything ever, right? They want you to know, they want you to believe that this game is doing so incredibly well and it's the cool thing that all the cool kids are doing and you should be a part of it. So if they're making that much money off of the game, why do they need microtransactions implemented well after the fact? It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I guess you could sort of choose to believe that they're being honest with you and that, you know, they're doing the good guy thing here in regards to saying, hey, we have these microtransactions. If you want to go to the tower, you can buy 18 brand new emotes. You don't have to buy all of them. And by the way, an emote in Destiny is basically just a fancy way of saying a useless dance your character can perform when they're walking around looking at other player character models that are walking around. It's pointless. It's useless. But I guess they're doing the good guy thing here and saying, go ahead and buy these microtransactions now and we'll provide you over the course of this next year with DLC for free. I mean, personally, I don't buy it, and I don't know how anybody else out there who's looking at everything that this company has done that just screams greed can really go along with this line of reasoning. Because when I hear somebody is introducing microtransactions, right, a year after a game has launched, especially a game that was allegedly so successful, I think one of two things, okay? The first thing is that maybe the game is not really performing quite as well as they want us to believe that it is, right? I mean, they have to be introducing this new line of currency of money coming through the in-game economy for a reason. And that reason to me says that they need more money, that Destiny's not living up to their expectations, to what they were hoping it would do. But I'm not really sure I buy that reasoning either, because you know, anytime that anything Destiny related comes out, it shoots right to the top of the sellers list, okay? I think this game is doing quite well, and obviously they have a very, very, very long-term plan for this game. If we're to believe the leaked documents that came out earlier in the year, Destiny 2 was originally slated to be released in the fall of 2016. Now, taking that into consideration, this makes me think, okay, It's go time. Either they're going to release another really, really big expansion next fall, because you know they're not going to leave the calendar empty in the fall of 2016. They're either doing another big expansion or they're actually going to release Destiny 2, as long as they didn't deviate from that plan due to the leak. So that means that this is a year until that launch. They have a lot of work to do, and it's going to be crunch time all the time for this company. So they don't have enough time to bother with releasing all these other substantial pieces of DLC. They're just going to trickle out little pieces of, you know, insignificant nothings here and there in order to satisfy the community and keep them interested. But it's not really worth charging people, because then they're going to really seem like the bad guy. So instead of saying, here's this little piece of crap DLC that nobody's going to really want, but we're going to want to make you buy it anyway, they're doing something else. They're saying, hey, here's some emotes through microtransactions. And if you support this and we're making some money, because obviously we are a business and we need to have a continual money stream over the course of the next year, since we're not releasing anything substantial, we will provide you guys with free DLC. And it doesn't make sense, because if you're financing, if they're expecting you and positioning this in a way where the customer, you guys, the gamers, are financing future DLC, it's not free. This blows my mind, and people are throwing it back in my face when I'm questioning the integrity of this statement, of this position that Bungie and Activision are taking in regards to launching microtransactions well over a year after the fact. So I guess the question is now is, what is my point? What exactly am I trying to convey to you, the consumers, other than the fact that they're not being honest and that this is potentially bad? What I'm trying to say is that whenever a company comes out with something like this, and it sounds like it's too good to be true, especially when they have a very recent contextual history of being dishonest and trying to do whatever imaginary in order to get money away from the consumers, in order to create this money vortex to suck you in, you have to question the motives behind everything that these companies are saying. Now, at the end of the day, if you're hearing all this and you don't really care because you really like the new emotes and you want to buy them, that's fine. That's up to you. It's your money. I'm not going to tell anybody how to spend their money. That's not what I'm here to do. My job, the way I see it, and the reason why I created BiteSizeImpressions.com to begin with, is because I want to provide information and give gamers something to think about so that they can go out there and make the best possible decisions with their wallet. And that's all I'm really trying to do here. Take everything that we've seen and heard from Bungie and Activision over the last year and think about this microtransaction thing. If they're being honest with you, if it really makes sense, or if they're really just trying to, you know, make another quick buck over the course of the next year. Personally, from my perspective, you know, again, as I said, they're a company. I know they need to make money. And if they're not releasing anything substantial over the course of the next year, because they're planning on working really diligently to release Destiny 1.75 or Destiny 2, they need a continual revenue stream. And that's how they see it, I'm sure. However, it's worth noting that if this game has made as much money as it has, if it's as successful as Activision and Bungie have been trying to convey to us, you know, they really have lost a lot of goodwill from gamers over the course of the last 12 or 13 months. It wouldn't kill them to take these little piddly pieces of DLC that they're planning on sparsing out to everyone over the next year and just giving it to them for free to keep them hooked, to keep them interested, to keep them feeling like that they matter to Bungie. Bungie has been dropping the ball so hard in that respect, and I just think that it would make better long-term business for this company if that's the route they took with this, instead of making it another money-grubbing position saying, hey, if you know, these microtransactions will finance future free DLC. Don't you think? That's all I'm really saying. So enough of that. Let's move on to the next topic. That's right, after oversaturating the market last generation, both Harmonix and Activision are back with their respective properties, Rock Band and Guitar Hero, to duke it out in October for who's going to reign supreme in the music game biz. And I want to talk a little bit about that because, you know, there's a lot of people that sort of have their feelers out there in regards to these games, and they're not exactly sure what they want to do. There are some people that can't really decide if they actually want to play one of these games or not again, and I can understand if there's a lot of people that are burned out and they don't want to get into it again, and that's fine. If you're already on that ship and you're just flat out, nah, I'm still bored of it, then neither one of these games are going to be for you. But for everyone else who's sort of saying, you know, I kind of want to get into it, but I'm not sure if I want this game, if I want that game. I'm not really too sure on what they offer and what they don't offer. So I want to get into that a little bit later. But first, we have to talk about something very unfortunate, which will lead into the first game that came out in chronological order this month. It appears that Harmonix has been caught writing five-star reviews for their product on Amazon.com. We're talking Morgan Millardo, Richard Cody, and Sean Witt. They're all employees of Harmonix, as far as I was able to tell. So they're leaving five-star reviews, and the first one from Morgan Millardo says, "Absolutely love the game. Rock Band 4 is a perfect introduction to video games and music gaming for me. As a new fan of Rock Band, I appreciate the intuitive structure of the game. I'm having a blast with the guitar. I made my way to medium level fairly quickly, which was very exciting for me. Freestyle guitar solo is so much fun, so in a very brief moment here, Morgan Millardo is basically saying, the game's good. It doesn't matter if you're a beginner. You're going to be able to learn. Playing on the medium difficulty setting is going to be rewarding. And hey, if you're a little more advanced and you want to experiment, we have freestyle mode." Richard Cody goes on to say, "The gameplay is both familiar and fresh." So they're, again, trying to appeal to both demographics here, the newcomers and the people who have been fans of Rock Band in the past. "Familiar because it's the always fun beat matching gameplay that makes you feel like you're in a band with your friends, and fresh because freestyle guitar solos are awesome." There they are, advertising those freestyle guitar solos again. "Holding different combinations of frets down produce different notes. The frets you hold down are up to you. It's fun to mix them together. This feature combined with freestyle vocals let your friends slash band make each song your own." Sean Witt goes on to say, "I got this game, and I have to say, it's crazy how fun playing Rock Band with a group of friends remains after almost 8 years. I've been playing the series since the beginning, and I'm a pretty serious gamer. It's astonishing that they were able to support DLC from that many years ago as well. I've never heard of a console game supporting DLC from a previous console generation. They don't have support for every song I wanted to bring into the new game, but I've already been able to bring hundreds of dollars worth of songs I previously bought to fill out a soundtrack that is now pretty tailored to my taste in music." All right, so there are a few different things going on here, right? The first thing is that there are people online that are seeing this reported, and their take on this is a little confusing to me. They're basically saying, you know, this sort of thing happens all the time. We've come to expect it. So it's really not that big of a deal. It's not really newsworthy. And of course, I disagree. I disagree because it's sort of like politicians in politics, right? We know that there are a lot of politicians that are really dirty and corrupt out there. And of course, when they're caught, we don't just say, well, because we know this stuff goes on, we're just going to let it go. No, that's not the way that it works at all. Instead, we say, okay, pack your bags and get the hell out of office. That's how that works. So, I'm obviously not saying that Harmonix employees need to be lynched over this, but I do think that people out there need to keep this in mind when they're thinking about buying a product. The second thing that's going on is that ever since Rock Band 4 has been released, there has been so far a lot of negative word of mouth. And there's a lot of different reasons for that, which I'll just sort of get into once we're actually talking about the difference between Rock Band and Guitar Hero itself. But I do think they're a little nervous with the competition right now with the product that they've offered. And the other thing going on is that, of course, this could affect their future. Okay, the success of this game, but it's not just their future, it's also Mad Catz. Mad Catz is providing the instruments for this package, whether it's just a guitar or everything else that comes in the box, such as the drums and whatnot. So Mad Catz, they're also in a lot of deep financial trouble, and if Rock Band 4 does not do well enough, then they're kind of done. So there's a lot of pressure on Rock Band 4 to do well, and so far that does not seem to be coming to fruition. And just based on the first couple of days that Guitar Hero Live has been out, it seems like the reception for that game is a lot more positive. So doing this sort of thing really seems kind of kooky. Also, just for an example, this sort of thing has happened before. BioWare employees have been caught in the past trumping up reviews for Dragon Age 2. So there are examples online, if you Google for them, that this sort of thing has been happening in the past. So this is not a unique situation. But again, that doesn't mean just because we know what's going on that we should be giving this company a pass. Anyway, let's get right down to business and actually talk about the products. Here we go! Primary differences between Rock Band 4 and Guitar Hero Live is that it's basically a big battle of old versus new. You know, Rock Band 4 is the old ex-girlfriend that you're running into for the first time in a very long time, and she says, hey, you know, I've missed you, you know, we should hang out, and maybe we should start seeing each other again. Come on, we have history together, you know me. We just need to work out the kinks that didn't work out so well last time for us, you know? Where Guitar Hero Live is like, the new hot thing in town. And what I mean by that is Guitar Hero Live is doing something completely different from its main competitor this time around. Rock Band 4 is offering you the same package, more or less. You can even use the same old instruments if you want to on your new Xbox One or PlayStation 4, as long as you have a dongle that supports that. Of course, you know, you're probably going to be importing a lot of old songs into the Rock Band 4 package, if you will, the platform. And you'll be doing the same thing. I mean, you're going to be feeling like you're watching the same thing. You're going to feel like you're navigating the main menus for the most part. You're going to be looking at the same musical note highway. It's all going to be very, very familiar, and there's going to be very little deviation. It's just basically a transfer from one generation to the next with new DLC packs coming to this game in the future. Guitar Hero Live, on the other hand, is going for a... it's a familiar feeling guitar controller, but the buttons on the neck are very, very different. And you're basically going to have to relearn how to play this game. Some people, that's going to turn off almost immediately. Where with Guitar Hero Live, some people might be really turned on by that. Because they're going to say, you know what? I can pick up that guitar and play a song I've never even heard before in this game. And because I'm so proficient with that guitar and the musical note highway system, I can pretty much play any song I want for the first time on expert and knock it out of the park. There's no challenge to these games anymore, and that's part of the reason why I walked away. So this whole new thing might be very enticing for some people to have a new button layout that they're going to have to learn. Because really, from my experience playing Guitar Hero Live, it is. It's very different. And you're basically forgetting all of the muscle memory that you've already acquired, and you're reteaching yourself. And having buttons that are sort of next to each other instead of going down a line on the fret, it makes it more difficult when you're playing at higher difficulty levels. So I'm not even sure I'm ever going to be able to obtain that level of expertise that I once had. But it's going to be interesting to try. Another main difference, and this is probably going to be a big one, if not huge, deciding factor for a lot of people, it's that while Rock Band 4 is going to be selling you songs that you can own and play anytime you want as extra DLC, Guitar Hero Live is not going to present you the opportunity to ever own any songs that is added to its library through Guitar Hero TV. Because the way Guitar Hero Live works is that there's 40 to 50 songs on the discs, which you can play whenever you want. But Guitar Hero TV is pretty much exactly what it sounds like. There are three stations that you can tune into at any given time, right? And from there, you select one and then you just hop right in whatever playlist they're playing and you play along with the songs as they come along. Outside of that, you're really just at the whim of whatever they throw your way. Now, so far, for someone like me, this has been really, really, really good. You know, it's surprising. There are about 200 songs available on this thing. So it's not like I'm getting a lot of repeat songs, even a couple few days with a lot of playing after the fact. But some people, they want to own the music that, you know, that they're going to have. And that's fine. I understand that. And if that's how you are, then Rock Band 4 is going to be the game for you. But me, I never purchased DLC on the old Rock Band or Guitar Hero platforms. I think the only thing I ever did purchase was probably Metallica's Death Magnetic album for Guitar Hero World Tour. And that's only because the album was just coming out and they timed this release appropriately. And I thought it would have been really, really fun to play. So I did that sort of thing. But that was the only time I ever spent money. I'm not interested in playing other songs for additional cash. So having Guitar Hero TV on hand is really nice for me. But it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. And I admit that. Especially since microtransactions are heavily involved here. Basically, each time you want to play a song at any given moment, you can. You know, you don't have to strictly play whatever Guitar Hero TV is playing on one of its three stations. You can pick a song and play it whenever you want, but you have to have a token. Now, the good news is that these tokens are earned through gameplay, and it doesn't take too many songs before you earn enough credits to actually choose and play a song with a token. However, it's all going to depend on your play style. I mean, if you want enough tokens so you can just play whatever, whenever, and never have to use Guitar Hero TV, Guitar Hero Live is not going to be for you. If, however, you just want to do it as sort of a once-in-a-while kind of thing, then you might be like me, where you have lots of tokens accrued and you're just not spending them all that often. Every once in a while, I might say, hey, I want to play this Deftones song. Or, hey, I want to play that song by Rush. But I'm not really coming to that all too often. I really like the mix-up between the Guitar Hero TV stations. So, all-encompassing the overall aspect of the differences between these games, it's old versus new. It's the same style platform with Rock Band, with DLC coming down the way. Guitar Hero Live is offering you an experience that all feels fresh right out of the box, up to and including its new Guitar Hero Live mode, which, instead of looking at people playing on the stage, you see everything as a full motion video that's been recorded in HD from the eyes of the guitarist. So it's first person, and it's like you're on stage playing, and you get to see how the audience reacts. So very fresh, very new, and they're taking a gamble with not allowing people to buy songs. So it's really up to you which way you want to go, if you're even looking to go either of these ways at all. But those are the major differences. Personally, obviously, you could hear the way that I've been presenting both of these games, and Guitar Hero Live is just more exciting to me in general. It's the one that I went for, and I've been having a blast with it. And the main reasons why I did go for it is because I didn't want the same old thing. I don't like the higher cost of entry for Rock Band 4, and I think Guitar Hero Live was offering something new and fresh, and I wasn't disappointed on that front. And as long as they keep doing some sort of rotation on songs through Guitar Hero TV, I think that it's going to be a very valid platform, because you don't ever have to sink another penny into this game in order to play new songs as they become available. So those are my opinions. Those are the differences. So next topic. So this is about The Witcher 3, and sort of feeling like they're introducing things in games lately that are a bit too immersive for their own good. Like, of course, Metal Gear Solid 5, last time there was a discussion with Gus about Metal Gear insurance. Yeah, let's buy fake insurance with real-world money. Sounds freaking fantastic, right? Where with the case of The Witcher 3, the new expansion, if you've ever done anything that has been dishonest in the game, really, that has netted you lots and lots of money, if you've ever done anything that's known to be a major exploit to earn lots of money, CD Projekt Red have the tax man come after you. And he comes along, he's like, yes, good sir, could you answer me these questions? Are you Geralt of Rivia? Oh, you all. Cheerio. That's fantastic. Did you ever enter someone's domicile and claim their possessions as your own so that you could sell them for monetary gain? Oh, I see. That's very naughty. Did you know that you're responsible for the theft of these items and paying them back for up to 200%? Did you know that, good sir? Because you indeed are. And I am the tax man, and I have you in my book. And if these charges are correct, then you are responsible, and I am here to collect. That's sort of how that whole thing goes down. And fortunately, CD Projekt Red aren't really too concerned about making you using exploits stick. Instead, it comes off as kind of playful, and you could sort of play by the rules if you want, or you could just be like, no. I didn't do that at all. That was some other white-haired, yellow-eyed dude who has swords and looks like me. It wasn't me at all. And if you do that, the tax man's like, oh, good, sir. Good sir, I commend you for your services. Thank you very much. I'll mark you in my book as paid. Thanks again, sir. I'll see you along. Toodaloo. So, yeah, so that's kind of nice that CD Projekt Red aren't really trying to rob anyone of 200% of everything that they've ever accumulated throughout the game. Because even if you didn't do these other serious exploits, who hasn't gone inside of a building that wasn't Geralt's and just robbed everyone blind? I mean, it's one of the primary ways that you gain currency in this game is by stealing things and selling them. You know, and it's a lot less strict than it is in Skyrim. Like, it doesn't really matter, like, 95% of the time if people are even around to see you do it. Like, if you go into someone's home and they're watching you, they're just going to watch you. That's about it. They're too scared of you to do anything. It's not wise to steal anything in front of guards, but, you know, it is what it is. So, between Metal Gear Solid 5's insurance, fake insurance for real-world money, and this tax man a cometh thing in the new expansion for The Witcher 3, I'm getting a little concerned because these things are not always going to come off as playful and cute. Fortunately for CD Projekt Red, it's there as another thing in the game, and you could just say no and be on your way, and that's fine. But, I expect more and more of these kinds of things to happen in the future, and I don't want players to ever feel themselves in a position where they're being punished for playing a game a way that they thought that they could play. Now, obviously, there are some very obvious exploits that have happened in the past, like people in Grand Theft Auto Online. Those exploits were abused to hell and back. But, I mean, in The Witcher 3, it's something that really comes off as part of the gameplay. So I don't feel like anybody should be punished for their actions in that. That's part of the open world experience, right? You get to choose how to play the game. Metal Gear Solid 5 with the insurance, yeah, they're not making you buy it, but the whole system has sort of been designed in order to make you want to, so you don't lose all that hard work by somebody else stealing your resources, you know? But in the future, I feel like we're going to see something happen where there's an exploit and you will be punished big time and there won't be any way around it. And it's going to suck a lot of fun out of the games for people if that starts to happen. So let's hope this is just sort of a cutesy little thing that goes away. All right, so this is a Q&A segment that is going to wrap up the show today. Basically, I went to Twitter, at BiteSizeImp, and I said, hey, if you've got any questions for me, send them my way, and I'll answer them on the show for you. And I did receive one from the Spirited Gamer, at Spirited_Gamer, and the question was actually kind of surprising to me. It wasn't the kind of question I was expecting to receive at all. The question was, what sort of hardships have you encountered while trying to get the website established? Honestly, I don't really think I'm past that point. I think I have a really long haul to go just in order to have a better, you know, readership and, you know, more people who tune into the podcast, that sort of thing. You know, I don't have any financial backing going into this website. The only money that I really spend on BiteSizeImpressions.com is the money that I'm using to renew the web hosting every single year through WordPress, right? And outside of that, it's just the video games and stuff that I buy with my own money. You know, there's nothing that I don't have a Patreon, I don't have an Indiegogo, I don't have Kickstarter, I don't have any sort of crowdfunding thing going on. I don't have PayPal links on the website. I don't ask people for money. I could easily ask for money and maybe even get some money and use that in order to promote the site, you know, and make it, you know, a bit more out there so people can actually see it and be drawn to it. But I'm trying to use other avenues. I'm trying to do the social networking thing, which is why I utilize Twitter so much. And I have the podcast that I'm doing now on a regular basis. Before it was, you know, maybe 4 or 5 times a year. Now I'm trying to do it every week or possibly every other week at most, so that I can get those episodes out there and people will be drawn to them on Twitter and also through iTunes, since the podcast is available there now as well. So there's a lot going into that, and it's a struggle constantly. I mean, I enjoy doing this, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it's a struggle in a negative way. It's just I'm always working harder and harder and harder in order to get people to take a look at and possibly even appreciate BiteSizeImpressions.com. If not, that's okay, because it's a passion project for me, so I'm not bothered too much if this site never grows beyond what it is right now. That's fine. But the larger answer is that I had to make a lot of, I had to take a journey in order to get to the point where I was even going to make BiteSizeImpressions.com in the first place. Back in about 2006, I started doing DVD and eventually Blu-ray reviews for DVDTalk.com. And that website, they treated me really, really good there. And when I first joined, admittedly, my writing was not really that good. But over the years, I got better and better and better, and I'm really happy with the content that I output nowadays through my keyboard, which is why I'm really proud by anything I put up on BiteSizeImpressions.com now, and that I owe a lot to DVDTalk.com for allowing me to sort of break my writing in, if you will. But I got to a point after so many years where I realized that I was spending most of my free time watching the stuff that I had to review, because it wasn't just the films I was reviewing. I had to watch the special features, listen to the commentaries, because I had to write about all that stuff. So between actually watching all that content and writing the reviews, which would take me some days to do in my spare time, I didn't have the time to actually play the video games that I wanted to play, to watch the movies or the TV shows that I was buying to watch at home. So I struggled for a long time about leaving DVDTalk.com, and eventually, even though I did it with sort of a sad heart, I did walk away from DVDTalk.com, but it was very liberating when I did so. So that was the first hurdle that I went through. But of course, shortly after leaving DVDTalk.com, there was an issue that arose, and that issue is I had an itch that I couldn't get rid of, and I knew that itch was in regards to my writing. I love to write. I've always loved to write since I was like 5 or 6 years old. It's just what I've always done. It's always been a part of me. So to walk away from DVDTalk.com and in a sense get part of my life back was great, but I needed an outlet. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start a blog. So I did. And it started out being a personal blog, but most of the stuff I started writing about was video games. You know, I was like, oh, this is fun. I'll do some like old school game reviews or whatever. And eventually I was just like, you know what? This is kind of cool. Like, I could turn this into a video game-based website. I could, because I love writing about video games. It's different than writing about film, so that's nice. And I don't have any deadlines to meet. You know, I don't have any studios to appease. The only person that I have to appease to make proud of, is me. I was in control. You know, if I put out one article a month, one piece of content a month, that was fine by me because I was doing it on my own terms. So I did that. But shortly after I started doing BiteSizeImpressions.com, very, very shortly thereafter, another opportunity came my way. Basically, there was somebody who became pretty well known through social networking sites like Twitter and NeoGAF and stuff like that online for some various reasons online. I'm not going to get into it because I don't want to reveal their identity. I don't want to throw any daggers their way or anything. But basically, they had an idea to come up with a website, and it seemed like everything that I was all about. It was about writing about video games, but with a consumer-oriented slant. And that's what I always tried to do in my DVD and Blu-ray reviews back on DVDTalk.com. So I said, this is fantastic. I like talking about industry-related things, and the world really needs a, hey, there's no curtain in front of what's going on behind the scenes here. Everything is transparent, and you know, if there's anybody that you know refuses us content because we're not willing to play ball with them, we're going to reveal that on the website so everybody knows what that company is like. And I said, this is what I need to be a part of. So I reached out to this person. I said, you have to let me be a part of this, and I sent some samples of my writing. They liked it. They brought me on board. But after many months of waiting for this project to come to fruition, within days after launching, it ended up tanking pretty hard. The person didn't really know how to manage content dispersal, meaning, you know, if they got a lot of things at once, they just shot it all out there without considering maybe we'd like to have some other stuff, you know, being doled out the rest of the week. And, you know, I don't know, a lot of things were changing behind the scenes. Writers were sort of dropping off like flies. So there was nobody really except for the myself and the person who owned the site in order to create content anymore. And I was sort of disgusted with the whole situation. They had such a great opportunity. They dropped the ball. So I walked away and I went back to bitesizeimpressions.com. It lit a little bit of a fire under my ass to say, you know what? This is what I want to do. So what if I don't have the same kind of reach that this person had? I know that I can do this with my own site and I can be proud of what I'm doing there. And I'm perfectly content with that. And here I am over a year later after, you know, sticking with bitesizeimpressions.com. I have no real desire to go anywhere else. I love what I'm doing here and hopefully you guys love it too. So that is all the stuff that I've sort of gone through, the hardships that I have encountered while trying to get bitesizeimpressions.com established. Hopefully that answers your question. I do hope that I continue to struggle though, because right now I'm seeing a growing number of people who are following me on Twitter, and it's not just people that I'm following that are following me back. I am also receiving people who legitimately just want to follow me, which is fantastic. So just in the last couple of weeks, I think I went up from like 500 followers, almost maybe a little less, to over 600. So that for me, that's a pretty phenomenal leap, and I hope I can keep that going. So anyway, everybody, thank you very much for listening to the latest Greatness Delayed podcast for BitesizeImpressions.com. Again, I'm your host, Michael Zupan, and we hope to see you next time.